I mean, the story I was spinning was I won't make it to the finish line. And because of that quietness in the mind, I could just see it for what it was. Well, it's a quad which is cramping. It's cramping right now. That doesn't mean that it cramps in a minute's time. Let's just see how it unfolds. And let's it's just what it is. There's no negative story around it. And then it stopped cramping and I could run again. Whereas the typical default would have been spinning that disaster story around it and very likely just getting more tense, and then it would have cramped even more, and then maybe I would have started walking, and then I would have given up. And all of that kind of downward spiral, I didn't buy into that.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello and welcome to the show. My guest this week is Kai Bretz. His accomplishments as an elite ultramarathon runner are impressive, and too much to mention here, but you can find the list in the show notes, ultramindsetpodcast.run. It's .run, not .com, so ultramindsetpodcast.run for the show notes for this episode and more. Kai is an ultramarathon runner, but before he became an ultramarathon runner, he was struggling to be a faster marathon runner. And he was stuck. He thought he'd hit his limit. He thought he was as fast as he was ever going to be in his life. But a mentor started talking to him about changing his mindset. He wasn't really convinced until one day he went through his garden gate and turned right instead of left. And that right turn was the start of a breakthrough, changed his running and his life. We talk a lot about what it means to turn right and how that actually changed his perspective and his mindset. He is an author now of a book called, of course, Turning Right, Inspire the Magic, How to Transform Who You Think You Are to Reach Your Highest Aspirations. A lot of good mindset advice for ultramarathon runners and just for life in general. In this episode, I'm excited to share it with you. Here's my conversation with Kai Bretz. Well, Kai, I appreciate you coming and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, and I know there's a lot of things that you have done that I could do as an introduction, but I always try to make this be kind of like a virtual trail run. And so, what I'd like to do is imagine that you and I had shown up at the trail together and we were going to run together, but we've never met. So I ask, how would you introduce yourself to someone new who doesn't know anything about you?
Wow. So running on the trail, I would keep it to running probably. So it's what I'm really excited about, rather than talking about what I've done. What I'm really excited about is helping high performers become elite. And that's how I somehow organize my life around it. So running is probably my avenue to just, to experience magic, and running on a trail is always a beautiful way of just experiencing something new and seeing what emerges, and that has driven me all my life. So my background, probably first question people typically have is my accent. Is where are you coming from?
Oh, yeah.
So I might just address that because, as you will have picked, I'm not American. Certainly not. I'm not even English speaking originally. So, born and raised in Germany, and then lived all over the world. So that's where different accents came from. Went to boarding school for a year in Scotland. Lived in Japan for a while. Worked in Russia for a while, and now my home is Melbourne in Australia. So I'm digressing here a little bit, but okay,
well, no, and so that brings up a question for me, is that, you know, you have lived a lot of places, and you know, I've pretty much lived in the same state, and I never spent anywhere long enough to like adopt a different accent than the one I was born with, or the one that I adopted as I grew up. So I don't hear any kind of trace of German in your accent. So how do you kind of gravitate toward, does that naturally develop? I'm unfamiliar with that, with the way accents work. So
yeah, so you're right. It's probably when I get angry, I sound a little bit more German. So then it comes through a little bit more. So let's don't make me angry today, and you won't get too much.
I will do my best not to do that.
So, but it's I always loved music. So, and that's probably where I developed an ear for just pronunciations, and obviously I've got my unique way of pronouncing things, but just trying to fit in probably as well. I mean, going to boarding school in Scotland, that was quite a culture shock. I wanted to go there for a year, but just fitting in and being the German guy, and I did my best to somehow speak relatively normal.
Yeah, normal for the place where you're at.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the United States, we have, you know, some regional accents, and there's a woman who grew up down south who's living here in the Midwest. I'm in Kansas City, who's living in the Midwest, and Midwesterners supposedly we don't have much of an accent, and every once in a while I can hear her Southern. You know, she's Midwestern in the way she talks, but a lot of times she'll relax and kind of drop in some of that Southern accent as well. So that, I guess that you never really lose where you're from necessarily.
No, I agree. And I still speak German, and probably these types of conversations I would struggle in German, because I've developed a lot through running and through doing what I do now, which is more that high performance mindset, which I couldn't even articulate in my native tongue, because it's just not the kind of language or the kind of, the repertoire is a bit limited for me there. So I'm glad we're speaking English.
Well, my German is non-existent, so I'm glad we're speaking English as well. And I enjoy talking to people who have an accent, and it's always good to hear people from around the world, and I appreciate your accent. So anyway, how did you get started as a runner? I mean, is it something that was lifelong for you, or did it come later in life?
Yes. So my first long distance run I did when I was 7 years old, and it was at the stage, it was 1 kilometer. So not even a mile, but it was clearly a long distance run at the age of seven.
Yes, especially at seven. Well, and for a lot of people who are adults, that would be a long distance run.
and I remember I wasn't the typical 7 year old running a 1 kilometer race. I held myself back because I was so terrified of not getting to the finish line because of someone blowing up. So I let everybody pass and somehow thought I would catch them. And then probably 3/4 through the race, I thought, well, I've got so much still in the tank. I need to hurry up. So I was sprinting past everybody, but my pacing was quite off. But at least I didn't make the beginner mistake of going out too hard. So that's my first memory as a runner.
Wow. And for most children I've been around, they children have a tendency to go hard and then back off and then go hard again.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit unusual. Was that something? When you look back at that, was there other things in your life that led you to have kind of go into the race with the strategy as a 7 year old?
Yeah. So I would almost call the emerging theme there was almost control, of just being very controlled and being very smart and being very logical, and that got me pretty far until it didn't get me much further. And that was probably the pivotal moment, which happened 6-7 years ago, where, as it happens, that kind of curve of diminishing returns, I mean, that's what was happening. So I was putting lots of work into my running, and I was a marathon runner at the time, a hobby marathon runner, really enjoying it and having improved my personal record from 4 hours 15 in my first race, where I was like 19 years old, to then in my mid-30s, I'd improved it by 90 minutes to 2:44.
Okay.
And it didn't really improve anymore, which is, I got to that stage, which probably many of us get to, where we say, well, that's the end of the road for me.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, and I couldn't have been more wrong, it would have been the end of the road if I'd stuck to my my usual traits of control and discipline and just getting things done by the book, which had gotten me that far,
mm-hmm.
but they were also holding me back from just blowing the lid off and going to a completely new level. And that's the theme I'm very excited about, is what gets us to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you kind of saw the seeds of that at age 7, I mean, that kind of is something that was ingrained into your personality. So, I mean, that followed you through up until your 30s.
And absolutely. So, it was a winning strategy up into my 30s of just, probably what one would need to know about me is that kind of thinking things through, it always came very natural to me. So mm-hmm. very much in my head, very much a problem solver, very disciplined, because I knew if I just do my work, I was never the kind of guy who was great in the first session of anything. But I was a hard worker. So when there's not enough talent, well, hard work somehow makes up for it and, mm-hmm. and in most cases overtakes talent at some stage. But then that strategy, somehow in my mid-30s, I noticed it's not getting me any further either. So it's like, where from here?
Okay.
Because if it's not talent and hard work somehow gets you to a certain stage and somehow to a top of a hill, where's the next peak?
So what kind of work were you doing? I mean, you were doing, you're working to increase your running speed. So what was kind of your strategy in that control period of, you know, of being in that same mindset from where you started?
So I had very disciplined and well thought through training plan. So in a way, I was running 6-7 times a week, doing my tempo runs, doing my interval sessions, doing my long runs, doing all the things which made sense and doing things by the book. And that got me very far. They somehow all made sense. What I was not doing, and that's probably then the key of what did I have to do, was it was all about running. I was focusing mm-hmm. on the running sessions. I was not focusing on my mental state, on somehow my inner game, on how do I regulate my emotions, how do I deal with setbacks, how do I just do something which is not on the plan. Mm-hmm. So what I couldn't do, my weakness, which I didn't see either, was I was no good at dealing with curveballs and no good at dealing with the unexpected.
Okay. You know, I think you've described a lot of runners out there.
Yeah,
I mean, the runners that I see on Facebook and the runners I talk to, I mean, it's all about the running and it's all about the physical side of it and what, looking for the training plan, looking for, the foods to eat and, strength training and, all of the things that go into the physical act of running is what takes up a lot of, of mental energy and focus.
And I think that goes even beyond running, if I may expand what you just
said.
Well,
yes, of course.
It's so much easier and so much more comfortable to just look at what's out there, because then it's just the thing. It's the running, it's the training, it's the food, it's something external. And what we don't have to do is really look into ourselves and, mm-hmm. and deal with the a bit more uncomfortable reality of to what extent am I the problem of the challenge I'm facing?
Yes.
And that is a question which very few of us ask ourselves and which is a Pandora's box of don't open it unless you're somehow prepared to deal with it.
So you got to a point, and kind of get hit a barrier in your running and your physical training. What was the thing that made you, how did you kind of make the switch to getting past that? Where you thought you were had leveled up and gotten to a place where you were, what was the switch that made you kind of be able to get past that?
So I was very lucky finding a mentor who somehow instantly saw my limitation. And he even told me, Kai, your problem is that you reach any goal, but you never go past the goal. So you're always realistic, but you're capped by being realistic, and there is nothing beyond that, which didn't really resonate with me. It made somewhat, potentially intellectually it made sense, but it didn't resonate with me and it wasn't actionable. So there was no room for that in my world.
And you were still running the marathon distance at this.
Correct.
You're focusing on the marathon and getting faster at the marathon.
Yeah, I was getting, I mean, I had like 8 seconds improvement here and then a 50 second improvement there. It's that kind of, I was playing at the edges. And as we know, I mean, probably lots of listeners right now say, yeah, there's nothing wrong with a 9 second personal record. I mean, you take it.
You take it.
Exactly.
But over the course of 26.2 miles, it's 9 seconds isn't that much.
Correct. Correct. And there was a lot of work putting into 9 seconds. And yeah. I remember the CEO of the company I was working at the time. I came back into the office on the Monday after a marathon and said, well, I made it. I got 9 seconds record. And he looked at me and said, all that work for meager 9 seconds. and I got angry. So because I mean there's the element of we do that, the sports, there's nothing wrong with 9 seconds. It's a win is a win, and it's a huge achievement. But coming back to how do we blow the doors off, what I needed to do and what my mentor helped me was experience my limitations and really see them for myself. Mm-hmm. What he prescribed to me, it was like going to a GP. What he prescribed me was saying, do mystery runs. So I had my tempo runs, my interval sessions, my long runs. And he said, no, let's do something new. You do a mystery run. And he just invented that term that very moment and filled it with life, saying, okay, ask a friend who's a really good runner to run the session for you. So you just run with that guy and you just keep up. You have no clue at any point in time for how long you're running, how fast you're running. It's like whatever he does, you do. So you're completely out of control. And I must have gone white in that moment of saying, I mean, no control is like, think of the 7-year-old who is somewhat very controlled in the 1 kilometer race. It's like, mm-hmm. No control was hell. Just the idea of like the first question which popped up was, when is it fair to give up? I mean, I can't keep up if he keeps going too fast for too long. But when is it fair to just say, I can't? And he said, well, you just deal with it. It's just see what happens.
That's part of the mystery.
It's part of the mystery. And so I was very, very nervous. And it was all about failure in my head, which describes my mindset there, because that kind of efficiency game, it's all about winning, and losing was a no-go territory for me. Mm-hmm. So, and what happened? So this friend of mine, Corey, he picked me up at home on a weekend, absolutely smiling from ear to ear, ready to break me and make me somehow sweat a lot. Mm-hmm. And he led the way through the front door, through the garden gate, and he turned right. So I had to do exactly the same as him. And I realized that never ever before at my own garden gate had I turned right out of my house. So I was running every single day of the week, pretty much, mm-hmm. turning left, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting better or different results. Mm-hmm. So really the definition of insanity, like yes. as a picture. And I instantly knew what my mentor was, or what he tried to convey to me, of I was limiting myself because there was a world outside of my house which I'd never entered.
Well, and you said it was the, you know, the definition of insanity, but you were operating so much in habit, you didn't even realize that that's what you were doing.
No, absolutely. It was like my system was just closed. It was there is no right turn somehow. And the next thing which happened, so I had that moment of realization, and then my intellect kicked in and said, well, what does it matter? Turning right off the house, turning left out the house. I mean, you're going for a run. How does turning right off the house make you a better runner? Can't be that important.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what happens probably for many of us. It's like we get that kind of realization and then we argue it away and nothing happens with it. And I was lucky enough that I did not let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through that run with Corey, and it was quite a struggle keeping up with him because he was running fast, running slow, just really playing with my head. But apart from the right turn, nothing exceptional happened in that run, other than somehow it stretched my imagination of, oh, there is a world which I never enter and maybe I am overly controlled. But I couldn't see the benefits yet. Next time, Corey took me onto a trail run, which at that stage, I hadn't been that much of a trail runner yet. And after a warm-up, we did some hills, and he started sprinting up a hill, like a few hundred yards just up the hill. So he was sprinting, I had to sprint. And I suddenly noticed that I was not only keeping up with him, and Corey was a much better short and middle distance runner than I was. So I wasn't even not only keeping up with him, I suddenly even overtook him. And just, although my chest was burning and I everything was screaming, stop, stop, stop. But I just kept going and I reached the top of the hill first. And that was the moment where I understood it was another right turn, like figuratively speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It was something I would never have done because it wasn't a smart thing to do. Don't challenge somebody you can't win against. But then I noticed by just doing it, well, I do have a chance. And the unexpected is happening here. And so from there onwards, I just was looking out for right turns. How can I do stuff which is against my natural way of acting, and where does it lead to?
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what they talk about, getting, you know, the phrase that is common is getting out of your comfort zone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And very much outside of my comfort zone, and not knowing what would happen next. And I start loving it. I really started like enjoying doing different things. And the first thing I did was signing up for a huge ultra marathon. So I was a road marathon runner.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed up for a trail race in the Australian outback. So in the desert, lots of sand, multi-stage race of in total 150 miles.
150 miles. And that was multiple days. How many days was
that? 6 days. So sixth day was just a very easy day. So first 3 days was a marathon each, then a bit of a shorter run, and then a double marathon on day five, followed by something small on day six.
Okay. So, but you're saying it was in the desert and in sand?
On sand, absolutely, in the heat and just far away from any civilization. And so it was, to use your words there, it was outside of my comfort zone. I had no clue what to expect. I'd never done anything like that. And for a marathon runner, somehow going through multiple marathons during the week and running a double marathon, it was just incomprehensible. Like, how can a human being even do this? Mm-hmm. I had no clue. And
So you was this something you just kind of decided? I mean, you felt this need to get outside your comfort zone. And this one was available. I mean, what was kind of the process of getting to that particular race?
So it was, I wanted a right turn. And I thought, this is as right as it gets. I mean, this is so different to anything I'd done. And I wanted to explore what is possible. So if I can run faster than Corey, who for me was the gold standard of short distance running in my world, like if I can run faster than him, why can't I run 150 miles? And it sounded, I'd seen a video of a previous year at that race, and it just, it looked phenomenal. I mean, trail races are so stunning, and Australian Outback is particularly stunning. I really wanted to go, and at the same time, I was too scared. So it was a back and forth, and really, I needed a lot of courage to just sign up. And that's what I would recommend to anybody who wants to do something big, is just sign up, just get over that first hurdle of arguing with yourself, and then get on with it. And then things fall into place one way or the other.
Well, and it's kind of like what you said, you made that right turn, and then your intellect began telling you, oh, well, it really doesn't matter. It isn't. So, you know, that it was your right turn into this big race. If you waited too long, your intellect would have talked you out of it and says, well, no, you really don't have to do that extreme to make a right turn. You find something easier.
Correct. So it's, in a way, I had gotten so far in my life because of my intellect, and I was not going any further because of my intellect. So yes. there was the point of just let's just put it aside. And that was a new realization for me, that my intellect had flaws. It's I knew that I was not a genius. I get that. But that somehow the conclusions I got to, I completely trusted them in the past. And suddenly there was that kind of, okay, it's like whatever I project, the future I see in my own mind, it's actually not right. So I have to make new experiences and find out what's possible. And if my intellect is wrong, what else is possible? So and that race was a great example. I mean, 6 months later, I did run the race, and I not only won it, which was a huge surprise, I even improved the race record by more than five hours. We say, wow.
5 hours. 5 hours. And that was your first, ultramarathon.
So it was the first one I had signed up for. I did do two ultramarathons beforehand in preparation of this race.
Okay.
So I signed up for this one, then did a 50 odd kilometer race here locally just to do some trail running. And that was a training race in preparation of it, and did a 6 hour race on an athletics track, which was designed to just get used to the boredom of running in circles and just basically improving the inner game of what happens if I just run for 6 hours on an athletics track. Yeah. So those were the two races I've done before.
Okay. So you went into this race kind of as a right turn. Did you have, like, did you plan a strategy for this big ultra that you did? Or, I mean, did you kind of go back into like, oh, I need to make a plan so that I know how to do this?
Yes and no. So in training, I was, so my strategy was in training to have a plan for anything I could foresee. So to really be very solid on any kind of thing which I knew would happen. So for example, it's at the end of a stage, make sure that I'm really clear. What food will I have? What type of stretching do I do, or foam rolling? What do I do? Mm-hmm. So of not making stupid mistakes. And at the same time, being very open. So create that capacity to then deal with the unexpected. So say, deal with the expected really well, and create room for the unexpected and know that it will happen. And that's what I did.
Okay.
So, and that strategy I can highly recommend to anybody.
Yeah. And that is a great, especially for ultramarathons, because there are so many unknowns. I mean, and you know, coming from the marathon distance, it's a little, I mean, it's still, there's a lot of things that can happen, but it's much more, there are fewer obstacles, fewer things that can pop up. I mean, other than physical, breaking down. But yeah, just a marathon distance, it's more of a known quantity than running, especially running trails and running ultras.
Exactly. So on that trail race, the first thing which challenged me very early on was there were pink flags showing the way, which now imagine red sand in the desert, mm-hmm. Australian desert, red sand, and then some pink flags here and there. And I was freaking out because I just couldn't see the flags at the beginning. And I had to stop here and there to just then reorient myself and find somewhere, where am I running towards, which was really frustrating. But luckily I had planned for somebody unexpected, and that was mm-hmm. unexpected to me. I hadn't trained that. I hadn't foreseen that. And I just calmed myself down and say, well, I'll get used to it. And half an hour into the race, I was very good at reading pink flags, and I saw them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. So, you ended up winning the race. What was the process you went through how was it that you were able to win and set the record that much faster?
So I just, first day I just ran. So first day it was a marathon where you can say, yeah, that's a known quantity. And I just ran. And it must have been a mile before the finish line. So very close. We had to run over the biggest sand dune, really deep sand. So it got getting bogged down. And on that sand dune, I saw another runner in front of me where instantly the alarm bells went off, because I had been in the lead from pretty much the very beginning. There wasn't anybody around me. And then there was this guy in front of me, which somehow startled me. So I was running even faster to catch him, which I did. And when I overtook him, just coming down the sand dune and close to the finish line, I realized that it was the guy marking the course. So I'd overtaken him and reached the first camp where we were, where they'd set up the tents, but they hadn't yet set up the finish line because nobody was expecting me. I was 45 minutes faster than anybody had been before on that first stage. Mm-hmm. And obviously the question was, is that the beginner mistake? So did I do the opposite of what I'd done as a 7-year-old, i.e. going too fast, too early, burned out, and mm-hmm. There's still 5 days of running ahead. Good luck. And I just had to deal with that, of just that discomfort and unknown. Maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong.
And you had a whole night to kind of think on that. So did you have, I mean, was there things that you did to kind of help keep you from going off the deep end and freaking out?
Yeah, so probably one of the things, I'd prepared a lot of, like, I'd prepared a mental toolkit. Okay. And so really on the inner game, and one of the things which has helped me in lots of races is when there is a break, it's a break. And that's also helping me at work. So I'm either working or I'm taking a break, but I'm not taking a break still working or still somewhere mentally running or already mm-hmm. wondering about the next stage. So think of tennis players. Well, when they change set and they just sit down, what are they doing? Are they just eating, or are they worrying about what's coming up, or some are beating themselves about the set they have just lost? Mm-hmm. And that's a real skill, I think, of when there's a break, and that means there's stuff to do. I have to eat, I have to roll, I have just to relax, I can have a chat. And yes, once in a while, a thought creeps in, and then just let it pass. And I did that pretty well. Mm-hmm. I had to deal with blisters, there was enough stuff to do. And so next morning, I was just curious what I felt like. I didn't know how my legs would pull up. And apart from a few blisters, it was okay. So second day, I ran even faster than on the first day. So boom, and it was a hotter day. And that was the moment when everybody suddenly switched. And it was that huge expectation was building up. So first I was facing the pressure of you're going to die on day two. So good luck. And this will be very embarrassing. And after day two, there was that huge expectation placed on me of, okay, if you got a race record on day one, a race record on day two, now we want to see more. And I had to just shield that off and say, okay, I'm not here to run to prove you right, to prove you wrong. I just do my thing, and it might be, it is whatever it is, and just run from day to day and stay present, which worked quite nicely up to the big day, which was the double marathon day, because I was scared. I'd never run a distance like that. 84 kilometers, which is, what's that, 52 miles? Roughly, double marathon.
Yeah, somewhere, that sounds about right.
Somewhere there. That was monumental for me, especially after having run more than three marathons in the days before. And I was very, very nervous. And it took me several hours to really settle into the race. I wasn't present. I was constantly concerned about just how bad my legs would feel at the end of the race. Mm-hmm. They were fine, but I was time traveling and just...
You were projecting yourself into the future and dragging it to you.
Which is not a nice way of... it's not a good strategy of running a race. But and I got through it. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. So the mental toolkit, was that something... I mean, you'd gone to... You said you were... made a right turn. When did you start developing the idea of needing the inner game and working on your inner game and, the mental toolkit? And
it started with that right turn, because I noticed what kept me from being a better runner was not running more, not running faster. It was somehow just thinking less, of being more present, of not projecting myself into the future. It's those were the things which were really keeping me restricted. Mm-hmm. And so I started meditation practices. I started even that signing up for a 6-hour race around the track, that was just saying, okay, that's, how do I deal with it? I don't know. It's pretty, I mean, everybody would say it's pretty boring running for 6 hours around a 400 meter track. But you're just there with your thoughts. And if we think of what's the fascination of ultra marathon running, I think it's that inner journey rather than getting to the finish line. It's what do we do with ourselves?
Yes. And learning how to manage your thoughts and your emotions while you're out there.
That's it. And they can be pretty nasty. They can tell really, really horrible stories. And then what do we do next? And that's what fascinates me about the sports. Yeah.
Yes. So you had a meditation practice. Was that something that you had done before? Had you tried meditating before, or how did that develop?
So I just started with it. I was curious. I'd heard about it. I mean, that was, we're talking 2014, 2015. It wasn't yet a thing, whereas I think now I hear more and more about it, and more people are doing it. So I just wanted to give it a go and a try. And so I started very light, and I'm very glad I did it that way, like 5 to 10 minutes most days. I had the intention of every day, and it didn't happen every day, but because I kept the entry barrier very low and there was nothing fancy about it, it was really just focusing on the breath without too many instructions and without really beating myself up for being good or being bad. I just did what I did, but by keeping it very low key, I just kept going. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed very quickly, I think it took like 2 weeks or so to really notice a difference, even with that minimal amount of time spent, of just noticing that I'd created a bit of a space in challenging situations where I had more chance of choosing my direction, of rather than going with on my default and getting angry, getting frustrated, whatever the emotion might have been, I noticed, oh, I have a choice here. It's like, it's the story my mind is suggesting. It's just a story. I don't have to believe it. I can actually go a different way. And that's, especially in ultra running, that's very helpful. So a key moment was when I had in another trail race, my quads were cramping. And it was running down a valley. So they were cramping. And I knew I still had 6-7 miles running up the same valley. So, mm-hmm. And with cramping quads, that can be, I mean, the story I was spinning was, I won't make it to the finish line. And because of that quietness in the mind, I could just see it for what it was. Well, it's a quad which is cramping. It's cramping right now. That doesn't mean that it cramps in a minute's time. Let's just see how it unfolds. And let's it's just what it is. There's no negative story around it. And then it stopped cramping and I could run again. Whereas the typical default would have been spinning that disaster story around it and very likely just getting more tense, mm-hmm. and then it would have cramped even more, and then maybe I would have started walking, and then I would have given up, and all of that kind of downward spiral, I didn't buy into that.
So have you noticed that, has your meditation practice enabled, I mean, you mentioned that you were able to recast the story and kind of make the cramping go away. Is there that connection between mind and body that you've explored to be able to manage physical manifestations that come with the emotions and with the physical activity?
Absolutely. So, but it's interesting how I find it works, or how, what in my experience, what it's like. So it's not that through the mental calmness, I can make anything go away. Mm-hmm. It's more like, I don't worry of it staying or going. And because of that kind of being okay either way, it doesn't tend to stay. Mm-hmm. But it's not through the back door of I'm trying to force a specific outcome. Mm-hmm. And that had been new to me, because I was, as I said, it's all about control. And control is, okay, I don't like this, let's push it away. That doesn't work. But in another trail race, so a 200 mile I did, I noticed, especially towards the end, so I raced for 68 hours and slept for two within those, where you say, well, logically, it's body's falling apart, everything just, I mean, 68 hours of running with 2 hours of sleep in total doesn't sound like a pleasant experience. Mm-hmm. And I was in complete bliss for the last 10 hours plus, complete bliss. And I noticed the body's basically following wherever the mind allows it to go. That's really my experience of create the possibility of just being be present, and then creating the possibility of that magic to occur, and like the sky's the limit. I was flying towards the end, which, how can that happen? My body's not that strong, but it's just the mind said, it's okay, just keep going.
Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, also there are people who kind of take the other approach, that their mind is like the driver with a whip. And, you know, so when pain comes up, you ignore it, tell the body it, you know, it's not there, and just keep driving it forward.
And I think that's a very good short-term strategy. Like if you have to do a 100-meter race, maybe that gets you through the last 10 meters. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't make anybody wrong for saying, well, use the whip, but be very clear about its limited effectiveness, because there will be that little boy within me will shout and scream at some point saying, I don't want to be whipped. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to work for 68 hours of whipping. It's just, it's not a winning strategy for that long.
Yeah. So there was something that you had said that sparked a question the way when your body is hurting, and that you is almost like you accept the way the body is feeling, and not try to necessarily resist it and block the pain, push it away. But there's kind of an acceptance there, and then that allows the pain or the cramp to kind of come and then go as well. And you don't hold it. You don't hold on to it. You don't focus on it. It's just kind of, you allow it to be, and then it naturally tends to go. Is that kind of.
Absolutely. It's, so what I notice is just acknowledging what is, because it's not, we are in control of our pain and our emotions. They just come and go as they like. And, just sitting with it, I think a very effective strategy is tuning in. That's a long-term strategy. It's tuning in rather than zoning out. Mm-hmm. So similar to the whipping, short-term potentially yes, and the same with zoning out. It's short-term zoning out, very effective, is saying, okay, I just ignore it. But it is a short-term strategy. And if we know we're in the longer game of ultra distance running, well, short-term strategies don't necessarily work for that long. And then tuning in works. And that's what I mean with the pain, of just acknowledging for what it is, because the problem is not the pain itself. The problem is the suffering, and that is having pain plus spinning that kind of disaster story around it that goes to suffering. And that's what really we're afraid of, because pain is just what it is. I mean, we know that sports has some kind of discomfort to it. I mean, mm-hmm. and we still do it. Mm-hmm. The problem is not the discomfort. I mean, a 100-meter runner will have discomfort. A marathon runner has discomfort, and an ultra-marathon runner has discomfort. We all face that. The problem is that kind of disaster story we put on top of the discomfort. And that's what is somehow not manageable, because if we then project ourselves, and again, we're time traveling, we're going towards the finish line, whereas we're just at the beginning of the race, saying, if it is this bad now, how bad will it be then? Mm-hmm. And that our minds can't, I mean, I can't hold that. I can't somehow deal with it, because it's like, it's impossible. Obviously it's impossible. Whereas right now, right here, yeah, I've got a cramp in my quad. Can I deal with it? Yes, I can. The imagination of dealing with that for another 10 hours, no, I can't. Right. But it's very unlikely that stays there for another 10 hours.
Or you tell yourself the story that this is early in the race, and it's just going to get worse.
Correct.
And you know, so yeah, there's a lot of different things you can say about when things go wrong.
And that is, I get to that moment in every single ultra race, but I know that the moment is coming. So I'm going to run in a few weeks' time a 150-mile race here. And I know that 3, 4, 5, 6 hours into the race, there will be the realization of, ooh, this is somehow uncomfortable. My legs are getting tired. Mm-hmm. Oh, guess what? Yes, they will be tired. And it's only 6 hours into the race. And at that moment, I always laugh when that comes up, because I know it's happening now. It's that moment where you say, oh, 6 hours into a race, 150 miles, that's a long way to go. So there are lots of hours to come. If it's already this bad and at this trajectory, it's unbearable by the end. So it's impossible. Mm-hmm. That's one way to go. And I know I don't buy into that story, because it might get better, it might get worse. And the reality is it just shifts, and it shifts all the time. But it never gets as bad as we think it does.
Yes. Yeah. Your mind, your body tries to, I don't know if it's your mind or body, tries to convince you that it's terrible. And it feels that way in the moment. And you know, it's, and the, like you said, in an ultra, that those moments kind of come and go. And you know, there'll be times when you feel that, and then a few miles later, you'll be back, you know, be back to feeling great. And like, oh, this is easy, or not easy, but it just, there's a flow and there's a, you know, a joy, and you know, there, the whole misery is kind of past, and you're kind of on a high.
And that, isn't that beautiful, experiencing those moments where, where just everything flows. And yeah. And even in those moments, we know that won't last either. That, right. That will also pass. Yeah.
Well, and I think what you've been saying is no matter which way you are, not to get attached to that moment, or nor project yourself. But I mean, not to accept what is, and to, you know, if it's a low moment and there's pain, and you know, accept it for what it is. And if it's a high moment, don't worry about the fact that it's, you know, that more pain might be coming down the road.
And that's probably linking it back to our previous conversation of where I'd noticed that diminishing returns of me just plateauing. And then I noticed if I don't limit myself and just don't invest all my energy into managing something which is uncontrollable, what we've just been discussing right now, if I just let go of that and just accept how it is right now, there's so much more energy to actually do what I'm meant to do, which is run. Mm-hmm. So it's not the running training itself which has lifted me to another level. It's actually the kind of the mental relaxation of saying, okay, now I don't waste my energy on worrying. I actually use that energy and run. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. And it's unbelievable how much faster that made me as a runner, and how much further I could go.
Yeah. And you're now coaching people, and you've written a book. You've got a book, Turning Right. And then you're also a coach and speaker. So tell a little bit about your work and what you, how do you take what you've learned and help other people to move forward with this?
So in a way, it's through running, I've noticed that really anything is possible. And there are those moments of just, you called it flow, of really just surprising ourselves. And now, for years, I wondered how can I somehow help others get there as well. So so I'd been working in corporate before and had been a consultant, and I thought, well, that kind of experience in the business world, linking that to sport, that in itself is not a new idea, but how do I really bring my experience to that? I'd been to world championships in 24-hour running, and so I left corporate and thought, how do I bring now that back into the business world? So I do executive coaching, where the idea is, how do I get high performers? Because the reality is, people in pretty high places, they are high performers already. Mm-hmm. But how do they get to that elite level of just where it's not all about the outer game of performance, which has all those kind of stressful side effects in a way of just, it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. How do they get to the place where they notice what their emotional state is, can somehow accept whatever is happening and deal with the curveballs, which I couldn't deal with in the past, and then become more inspirational leaders who solve bigger and more complex problems and build really thriving organizations. So I work with individuals, which is the executive coaching. I work with teams, like on their transformation journeys. And then you mentioned the corporate speaking. That's really the part I really love, is getting in front of audiences and exciting them. Because whether it's, you don't have to be a runner or even do sports to really just connect to those moments of, we are all capable of so much more. And all of that I packaged up in my book, Turning Right, which most people nowadays actually don't read but listen to as an audiobook.
And you did the audio version, is that if I did indeed.
I thought, because it's my story and it's not about me, to be very clear, that it's neither about me nor is it about running, but there's lots of running in the story. Mm-hmm. It's really about helping the reader on their own transformational journey of finding meaning, finding growth, finding that kind of spark within in them. So every chapter has lots of questions at the end of just asking questions to the reader to reflect and see, mm-hmm. like, what can you take out of the book which helps you on your journey? And I thought I have to be the one speaking it with my accent, but it's way more authentic.
Yeah, and that is especially if it's that personal. I can see. I mean, it would be be hard to give that over to someone else to hear, you know, that you have the inflection, you know, you've written it, and yeah, I could see how that would be. But yes, audiobooks is the way a lot of people consume books right now, and I know because everyone's so busy. And
the nice thing is that as a really interesting side effect of having an audiobook is now whenever potential clients approach me, I always recommend listen to the book first. It's not a big investment of just taking the time to listen to the audiobook. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, unless the book is speaking to you, I might not be the right person. Mm-hmm. Because if this excites you, it's me. If it doesn't excite you, well, maybe I can help you find somebody else.
Yeah, and that's a good thing for, you know, to keep in mind as a coach, is that, you know, certain people are going to resonate with you, and certain people, you know, just it's you need to be able to find people who can accept what you have to say, and
I think that's super crucial in any coaching relationship, because it requires vulnerability. I mean, we're going to places where we don't naturally want to go to for our growth, and the connection needs to be there.
Yes, yes. And it was interesting you talked about your wanting to inspire people. When people who hear, you know, that I'm a runner and the kind of distances that I've run, oftentimes they will say, I can't imagine being able to run that far. And I remember I was at a point I couldn't imagine it either. I mean, if you'd have told me 5 years ago, you know, or, you know, if someone would have come up to you after a marathon and said, you know, in 5 years you're going to be running 150 miles through the desert, you know, it was beyond imagination. And but I have to say, that's really where the first step to kind of being able to imagine, maybe I could do more. Maybe this barrier, maybe this place where I'm at, this level I'm at, is not all there is. Maybe I can make it turn differently when I walk out the gate.
Yeah. And I think the difference between running a marathon and running an ultra marathon, whatever distance that is keeping, just shifting that mindset and keeping it a possibility that you might be capable. And I think anybody's capable of running 100 miles, mm-hmm. And even more. But the difference is we need to believe it first. We need to even imagine it first. Then we need to believe it. And yes, there is work involved. But running 200 miles versus 100 miles, it's not more physical training, really. It's the kind of the mental evolution we need to go through of saying, yes, I'm capable of it. And there will be quite some highs and lows, but it's learning to navigate those highs and lows rather than stopping and saying, I'm not capable of it. Because if we believe we're not capable of it, we actually will be right.
That's true. And I think that happens. I mean, I've seen that in my life, and I think it happens for a lot of people. Is that we talk ourselves out of the, you know, a very exciting and fulfilling life, just, you know, because we just the way we talk to ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, self-talk, it is all about emotional regulation and then the self-talk which goes with it. And And that's bringing back to the tuning in. It's not about avoiding somehow how we feel and avoiding about the negative stories which come up. I mean, lots of us deal with anxiety as well, and it's a reality. It's in our minds, it is real. Is probably by not pushing that away, of just seeing what does it have to say? It's here anyway, dealing mm-hmm. with that. There's a higher likelihood that it somehow moves on rather sooner than later.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and the ability to walk, to kind of go through the pain and go through in emotional discomfort is really, that's where the power is to be mm-hmm. able to, and like kind of what you said of letting it flow in and letting it flow out. Yeah. Well, thank you a lot for giving us this time. And you know, how can people connect with you? Give us, and I'll put it in the show notes as well, but it'll be good for people to hear it.
So turningright.com is my website. There also you'll find all my contacts, but I'm on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on what are they called? Basically on social media, mm-hmm. Kai Bretz or Kai Bretz Turning Right. With that combination, you do find me. And particularly if anybody was reading the book or listening to the book, easiest place is probably the Amazons of this world finding it, mm-hmm. so Amazon and Audible and the likes. Just let me know what you think about it. I love hearing from listeners and readers just how it resonates with them and what it means in their lives. And that's somehow the kind of biggest excitement as an author is mm-hmm. Just getting feedback.
Yeah, yeah. I had a guy that that I know asked me about the book that I'd written and said that the concepts that were still helping him. And I was like, it feels good to have that in feedback.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. Well, thank you a lot, Kai. I appreciate your time, we'll let you know when this is published.
It has been absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast. I hope you enjoyed what Kai had to say and how his mindset helped him to reach new levels he never imagined possible. That's what I hope to do, to inspire you to also look at your mindset and how it can help you in working on the mental side of running and life. If you'd have a comment about this episode or any episode or a question or a story, I have a place for that on the Ultramarathon Mindset. I always get this wrong. UltraMindsetPodcast.run. UltraMindsetPodcast.run. I have it written in front of me, and I still end up putting the ultramarathon in there. UltraMindsetPodcast.run, the top of the page, comments, questions, and stories. There's also a link on the sidebar. You can give feedback. I would love to hear from you. If you have anything to say to me, I would love to hear it. If you did enjoy this episode and know somebody who might like it, remember to take a minute, send them a link, tell people about it. I really appreciate your support in helping this podcast grow. Also, if you know somebody who has a good story who would be a good guest on the podcast, get in contact with me. And again, ultramindsetpodcast.run. There's show notes there and all kinds of things related to this podcast. That's the best way to contact me. Remember, I am a mindset coach, and we talk about mindset and running here, but mindset is about more than just running, and mindset can keep you stuck. Like Kai said in this episode, being stuck oftentimes is just in your mind. If you want to see how a life coach can help, how a mindset coach might help you get to the next level, do things that you may never have imagined possible. That's what the mindset coaching is all about. Send me a DM on Instagram at Eric Dieter, or you can use the link, of course, ultramindsetpodcast.run. Leave me a voice message or a text message there, and be glad to talk with you, see how I can help. Thanks again for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And come back next week for another episode. See you then.